You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Where's the windshield wipers? Great to have you with us. It's a beautiful Wednesday here in Washington. It is Wednesday, right? Yeah, in Washington, D.C. And there are a few things of interest in the news. The we're watching this drama play out between Dianne Feinstein and the CIA. And who's spying on whom and who broke the law. And apparently this lawyer at the CIA who may have broken the law back during the Bush administration with regard to the torture program, at least from the suggestions that Dianne Feinstein is making on the floor of the Senate, you can infer that, has threatened her or her staff with going to jail if they continue to do the things that they've been doing that might expose his own actions. I mean, this is truly bizarre. So that's going on. This is today is the second anniversary of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. This, while you know the administration is pushing and there's all this hoop-de-doop about SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, also known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. So they're pushing SHAFTA, the TPP, but it's the second year of the K-CAFTA, the Korean Free Trade Agreement, or KAFTA, maybe we should call it, or Kafka. It's certainly Kafka-esque. And this was the Korean Free Trade Agreement was sold to us on the idea that, oh, it's wonderful. We'll be able to export all this stuff to Korea. We'll make all kinds of money. It'll help our trade, our balance of trade deficits, which is actually the worst. That's the deficit we need to worry about. There are two deficits that we need to worry about. One is all the money that American companies are stashing offshore. We discovered today it's almost $2 trillion. They added another couple hundred billion dollars this last year. This in today's New York Times. I'll get to that in more detail in a moment. And the second is our trade balance. Because when we buy more than we sell, other countries end up sitting on a lot of our dollars, and they've got to spend them ultimately here in the United States, where the country that creates the dollars. And so they end up coming over here and buying up our businesses, buying our buildings, buying our forests, buying, you know, basically buying us. And eventually, there's not much of us left. Plus, when we're buying things from overseas, we're not buying them from domestic manufacturers. We're not buying them from manufacturing companies here in the United States. I think I mentioned our friend Richard from Melbourne, from Australia, spent the day Sunday with Louise and me. He was in New York 2 days before on Friday speaking at a conference on neurology. In fact, he's actually the president of the society that puts on the conference. And he came down and spent the day with us Sunday, and he took Amtrak from New York down to D.C. And he said, my God, that's so, I don't remember the exact phrase he used, but just it's devastating. If you've never taken the train from New York to D.C. and you have an opportunity to, go for it. First of all, if you take the Acela, it's not a bad train ride. You know, it's a very nice train ride. In fact, it's only 3 hours. It's faster than flying when you consider the time that you have to get to the airport and go through security and stand in line and check your bag and get your bag and all that stuff and then get to and from the airports and everything else. And the train stations are both downtown in New York and D.C. So you go from Union Station to Pennsylvania Station. It's just, you know, from downtown to downtown in 3 hours roughly. But beyond that, this is an educational experience that every American should have. Because when my dad was a kid in the 1940s and 1950s, and when he was a young man even in the 1960s, if you took the train from New York to Washington, D.C., you passed, or even the early 1970s, you passed mile after mile after mile of factories and housing that was filled with people who worked in the factories, prosperous neighborhoods, factories just banging out stuff left and right, all kinds of things from precision tools to blue jeans. furniture, I mean, you name it. It was being made along the Northeast Corridor, and people manufactured right up to, in factories that ran right up to the railroad line, because they shipped things by rail. And they're all gone now. It's absolutely astounding. It's like a moonscape in some places. Or actually, it's more like something out of Blade Runner. I mean, as you're taking that train up there, you see these factories, huge factories, that haven't been occupied since the middle of the Reagan administration or the middle of the Bush or Clinton administration, the first Bush or Clinton administration. They have been occupied 10, 15, 20, 25 years as a result of these insane free trade agreements that we've entered into. And the windows are smashed out. There's graffiti all over them. In some cases, the roofs have been burned out and caved in. Homeless people have lived in them. They've been used as drug warehouses. They got gang graffiti on them. And you pass miles of housing, beautiful 2- and 3-story brownstone kind of, you know, row houses that come almost right up to the tracks. That were the, you know, the prosperous neighborhoods of blue-collar workers who had good union jobs, who worked in these factories and middle-class schools, the whole thing. And it's all empty. The roofs are burned out and caved in. The windows are boarded up or not. That's the Northeast Corridor. So the numbers are out about the 2 years into the experiment with Korea. We just tried it with one country. You'd think we would have learned after 30 years of this insanity. But we tried it just 2 years ago, and this was, you know, at the strong suggestion of President Obama. Hey, let's cut a deal with Korea. And Public Citizen has issued a news release on this. Lori Wallach's group. Citizen.org is the website. And I think it's citizen.org/trade for their trade watch. But you can just go to citizen.org and you can click into it. The headline of their press release says, on the second anniversary of U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement, U.S. exports down 11%, imports from Korea up, and the deficit with Korea balloons 47%. We have lost 46,000 good-paying U.S. factory jobs as a result of just this two-year experiment of a free trade deal with Korea. We have lost an average of $385 million every month in exports to Korea, a cumulative $9.2 billion in exports to Korea. Our agricultural exports to Korea have fallen 41%. Our trade deficit with Korea has grown by 19%. And here's what's most amazing. Korea has actually increased their imports from every other country except the United States by 2%. So they're buying less from us, they're selling more to us, and they're buying more from other countries. Probably most of it is China, which doesn't have, I mean, they have theoretical free trade deals, but the way that they work them, they're not really free trade deals with anyone. So there's that. The other thing I want to get into is drug testing. The American Society of Addiction Medicine has come out and basically said, we should drug test everybody all the time. I have to tell you an incredible story about a friend of mine in the early 1970s and the business that he started and how he became rich and what it means for us right now and what this all has to do with the Fourth Amendment. And I'll get into that right after the break. But there's a lot on the news. Oh, and Paul Ryan has come out, spoken out on poor people. Oh, boy. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, Paul Ryan has spoken out really weird this morning on the radio. Some really weird stuff about poor people and genetics. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Andrew Campbell on the line with us, with senior producer with The Big Picture. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Tom.
So tonight, Lone Liberal Rumble with Chris Ullman and Horace Cooper.
Yeah, it should be a good rumble with both of them on. We're going to start off talking about Chile. Michelle Bachelet was officially sworn into office yesterday. And it's really a great thing for the Chilean people. She's, as a lot of people know, she is a socialist. She's got some great ideas for healthcare in Chile and education. And we're going to really talk about why can't we bring the ideas that she has for healthcare and education in Chile, and why can't we use those here in the U.S.? Things like, shouldn't education be a right? Shouldn't healthcare be a right? Shouldn't everyone, regardless of wealth or status, have access to a good education? And we're talking through university, public universities, like, and basically go back to how it was in the U.S. 35-plus years ago when people could work their way through college, or they would get enough scholarships to get a college degree. So we'll be talking about that.
Okay.
Then we'll be talking about a variety of other things, including, as you just mentioned, Paul Ryan's comments about poverty today. Pretty shocking. We'll see if Chris and Horace agree with him. We'll also be talking about Mike Huckabee's recent comments about women and how you have to treat them like they're very special and on a pedestal when you're talking about them. It doesn't sound exactly right, but it does sound like something that would come out of the Republican Party, so we'll get into that.
Okay.
And we'll also be touching on Dianne Feinstein's recent comments that the CIA illegally looked at the computers of the Senate Intelligence Relations Committee, and what that means for the future of domestic spying in the U.S. and what needs to be done to curtail spy agency powers.
This should be fascinating. And then we're doing this for both Block A and Block B.
Correct.
So in Block C, best of the rest, our Green Report, we're going to get into geothermal.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Mark Roosevelt. He's the president of Antioch College out in Ohio. And they're doing something really interesting. They have created, or they're in the process of creating, a geothermal energy power plant for the campus. And basically what they're trying to do is decentralize their energy and take the power to create energy and to distribute it away from large corporations and put it more on a local level. And this is something you've been talking about a lot lately. And so it will be good to get some firsthand knowledge about how this really works.
Yeah, I agree. And in our fourth block, in Block D, Pastor Bullock is going to be with us?
Yep, we're going to be talking to Pastor Bullock again. He's got some new news coming out of Detroit, as well as Benton Harbor, Michigan, where the emergency manager has been taken out of their position. But a lot of people are saying that this was a strictly political move. So it'll be interesting to get Pastor Bullock's comments on what's going on up there.
Yeah, I wonder what the politics of that are. Or if he just, you know, they just, you know, robbed, raped, and pillaged the city and there's nothing left.
Yep, there's nothing left, so get out of town.
Yeah. I mean, they took that park. That was the major asset. It's pretty amazing. So, and then our daily take tonight.
The daily take will be about ending all drug testing in America.
Something I'm going to get into in just a minute here, because I think this is just nuts. But this forced drug testing, if employers are requiring it, you can argue that that's, you know, a consensual relationship between the employee and the employer. But increasingly, in a bad job market, there's an element of coercion there as well. But certainly, government mandated drug testing should not happen anywhere, in my opinion. Andrew Campbell. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to see you. We'll be back. 20 minutes past. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, drug addiction, and this is something, or drug use and abuse, this is something that I'm curious your take on, too. The American Society of Addiction Medicine just came out with a white paper basically calling for everybody to be drug tested. And as their paper notes, and I'm quoting from this white paper, a major need today is the wider and smarter use of the currently available drug testing technologies and practices. Smarter drug testing means increased use of random testing rather than the more common scheduled testing, and it means testing not only urine, but also other matrices such as blood, oral fluid, saliva, hair, nails, sweat, and breath. This is bizarre. Please stand on this treadmill for 15 minutes, work up a sweat so I can scrape it off your forehead. Spit into the... I'm going to cut your hair and keep some... I mean, really? This is, I think the drug testing is degrading. I think it's invasive. And I think we should put an end to it tomorrow morning. The Fourth Amendment of the Constitution says the right of the people to be secure in their persons. That's your body. Shall not be violated. But upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. Somebody has to swear that you've committed a crime before your body can be violated. It's right there in the Fourth Amendment. This is the core of the Constitution. Now, I realize the Fourth Amendment limits what government can do, not what corporations can do. But a lot of corporate drug testing now is government mandated. You work for the airlines, you work for the railroads, you work for a bus line. It's federal rules that you've got to be drug tested. I think this is wrong. I have two of our kids work in hospitals. They have to get regularly drug tested. I think that's wrong. What, in my opinion, what drug testing does is it gets us used. It gets us used to the idea that we do not have the right to security of our person, to paraphrase the Fourth Amendment. And you can say, well, you know, some companies may decide to do it just because they decided to do it, or some schools may decide to do it because they're having a problem with drugs on campus or something. And that's, you know, that's not the government. That's a private entity with a private entity. But I would say that there is an element of coercion there that is makes it very unsavory by my mind. People say, well, you're not coerced to take this job. Well, you are if there's no, you know, if it's a crappy job market. If your only choice is, you know, if this is the only employer within 100 miles, or if this is the only job you can get after 2 years of looking, and Paul Ryan is cut off and John Boehner and Mitch McConnell have cut off your unemployment benefits, I'd say there's a large element of coercion there. I think it's just wrong. People say, well, what about airplanes? I don't want to get on an airplane unless I know that the pilot's been drug tested. Remember that Colgate Airlines plane that went down in Buffalo a couple of years ago? Big story about that, big kerfuffle around that. New York Times did a big story. They found that they discovered that the pilots were making less than a manager at a Burger King. They were, you know, it was like under 20 grand a year or in the neighborhood of that at the most. Very little, number one. Number two, they were saying, well, our pilots only fly, you know, up to 8 hours a day, right? Or whatever it was. I mean, there's whatever the FAA limit was. But their pilots, in some cases, had to fly halfway across the country to get to the place they were supposed to fly from, and that wasn't counted. And so they were getting up at all hours of the day and night to get on a plane, to deadhead to, you know, to fly to where they were going to work, and then to deadhead home. And it's like, really? If you want to know what's a real risk, if you're a nervous flyer, you don't need to worry about whether your pilot was out smoking dope last night. You need to worry about whether your pilot slept last night. Now, I'm doing this show right now on 5 hours of sleep last night. It's a long story, but it had to do with work and interruptions and lots of other things. But the bottom line is, I most studies show that if you're sleep deprived, you're more impaired than if you were recreationally using drugs over the weekend. So by this logic, that we need to know if these people are impaired. In other words, if they've been using drugs, well, should we know if they've been sleep deprived? Let's just put cameras in everybody's bedroom. And we can measure how many hours they sleep and how well they sleep. Do they have sleep apnea? Do they wake up regularly? Are they light sleepers? Do they wake up in the middle of the night and read for a while? I mean, what's the deal? This is totally bizarre. I had a friend, his first name was Stanley. I don't want to give his last name out, but my friend Stanley back in the early 1970s, he was a chemist. He dropped out of college because he started this little business that was drug testing kits. And it was test the purity of your cocaine, test the purity of your methamphetamine, test the purity of your pot. And he was selling them in High Times magazine, in the back of the magazine, in the classified ads for, you know, like 10 bucks plus shipping and handling. And he was making a fortune because there was 15 cents, 20 cents, a dime, 10 cents worth of chemicals in these kits. When drug testing became all the rage in the late 70s, early 80s, after Nixon declared his war on drugs, Stanley sold his company for millions of dollars, I think it was over $100 million, to one of these big drug testing companies. This is nuts. We need to put an end to drug testing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Not only is drug testing, it's basically a multi-billion dollar industry, just like the private prison industry that lobbies for more of itself, but it also gives us a false sense of security. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, let me just explain this a little further, because apparently a lot of people have just bought the idea that people are not capable of policing themselves, their industries, or others around them. And therefore, their employers have to do it. Or even government has to do it. I realize this is starting to sound like a libertarian rant, but so be it. I worked in the travel industry back in the early 80s. Louise and I opened a travel agency in 83. We sold it in 86 in Atlanta. Before that, in the early 1970s, I got my pilot's license. I knew commercial pilots as well as private pilots, but I knew some commercial pilots. I trained with some commercial pilots. Used to hang out with them out at the Lansing Airport, guys who flew in and out of there. Back then, there was no drug testing. And I can tell you that back then in the early 70s, if a pilot had been out drinking the night before, now there was an absolute rule against that. You could not drink within 24 hours of being on a plane. If a pilot had been drinking the night before, and anybody who was affiliated with that airline knew about it, they would turn him in. Because who wants to get on an airplane with a guy that might not be a good pilot? Nobody. The flight attendants and the co-pilots are more hysterical about it, frankly. They know everything that can go wrong. Than are the passengers. There has never, we've only been drug testing for a couple of decades, for about a decade and a half, for a couple of decades. But we've been flying commercially since what, 1920 something? There has never been a commercial airliner crashed in the United States as a result of a drunken pilot or a high pilot. Never. This is a problem. This is a solution without a problem. And as I said, there are things that I think probably contribute more to. And in fact, there has been an airline crash as a consequence of pilots not getting enough sleep because they're underpaid and overworked. Let's deal with the real problem rather than the imaginary problem that creates billions of dollars in profits for the drug testing industry. Similarly, people working in hospitals. Or in any other, you know, that's any kind of public transportation. People working in hospitals. There's drugs around, and they have people's lives in their hands. There's a lot of things that impair people. We should be looking, and people working in hospitals should be constantly vigilant for any signs of impairment, whether that impairment is the consequence of domestic violence, whether it's caused by mental illness, whether it's caused by lack of sleep, whether it's caused by a crisis in somebody's family that has them flipped out, there's all kinds of things that should cause a supervisor, somebody to say something to a supervisor, and a supervisor to sit down with somebody and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe you shouldn't be working today or this week. And the fact that somebody smoked pot last Saturday is not, in my opinion, one of them. Unless there's somebody who is impaired as a consequence of that. And if there's any evidence of impairment, then take them off the job. But to to routinely or randomly drug test people on a continuous basis, on an ongoing basis, is to assume that they are, there's a presumption of guilt here. And it provides this false sense of security. It causes other people in the hospital to stop looking at everybody else and you know, no longer, hey, people couldn't be impaired, everybody's drug tested. Pilots couldn't be impaired, everybody's drug tested. Nonsense. There's lots of things that can produce impairment. This is this canard that has been promoted by this multi-billion dollar drug testing industry that is a mind-bogglingly profitable industry. Just ask Rick Scott down in Florida. He made millions drug testing people. 10 cents worth of chemicals, you can sell a drug test nowadays. Back when my friend Stanley sold his business, they were selling for 10 bucks. Now they're 40, 50, 100. And increasingly, they're making you pay for your own drug test. I think it's wrong, and I think it's crazy. So, and I think it's unconstitutional. Kathy, in Etna, Wyoming. Your thoughts on this, Kathy?
Tom, I can't agree more that it's unconstitutional. And I'm sad to report I got my 14-year-old son kicked out of marching band at his freshman year this past September because I refused to sign a random drug testing form that they blanket on all kids in any extracurricular activities.
What the? What, were they afraid that he would take the drum and run over and bang somebody in the head with it if he was high? I mean, what possible association, what possible crisis could a kid in a marching band having, you know, taken drugs at any point in time have?
Well,
I don't get it.
I'm doing my research on this, and I've posed many questions to the local school board and everybody, and so far nobody is responding to my questions. But I have one of the arguments presented to the Supreme Court, and Ms. Malawi is one of the attorneys, and she clearly says national studies show that band, comma, vocal, and non-athletic extracurricular activity students, comma, they are the least likely of all students to use drugs.
Right.
I mean, this is before the Supreme Court. This was back in 2002. I don't get it.
But even if they did use drugs, Kathy, how does that, you know, what does that have to do with band practice? I mean, if they're too impaired to work to function in the band, they should get bounced out of the band program. And by the way, bounced into a treatment program.
Thank you.
He's a
14-year-old kid. He's a great student. And I don't get it, and I gave him the opportunity that I would step aside if he didn't want me to fight this, and he could be in band if he and his dad wanted to do this, but that I could not be part of it because I think it's unconstitutional. And he and my husband talked it over, and they decided that they would stand with me in this fight.
Yeah, we have just gone nuts with this in this country,
and I
think it is destructive. I think it degrades us, and I think most importantly, it causes. I mean, when you start doing this to kids, it tells them you have no security. Your own body is not secure. You have no privacy. We are capable of watching you anywhere, anytime, and I mean, this is not. In fact, one of the people that I work with here, was telling me the story about how their cousin was in the Coast Guard and got randomly drug tested, and it came back false positive for cocaine, and he definitely had not used cocaine. And he tried to challenge it and was told by the chain of command, if you challenge it, you're going to lose, and you're going to get a dishonorable discharge. If you go along and say, yes, I was using cocaine, you will get an honorable discharge. In other words, don't challenge the drug test. Don't rock the boat.
Unbelievable.
This is devastating. This is destroying careers. It really is. Kathy, thank you for the call. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. You have an update on what's going on in Wisconsin and Reverend Barber?
Yes, Reverend Barber. One person who was down south with his son on a trip went and saw Reverend Barber and asked him to come and has made arrangements. And he will be here tomorrow night. He will be at the noon sing-along.
That's great.
And he at the Capitol in Wisconsin. And he will also be at Bethel Lutheran Church at 7 p.m., although you really have to get there early because we expect standing room.
This is all in Madison.
Yeah, it's
That's
in Madison.
Great. That's great. He's going to be on our TV show tonight as well. So I'll,
you know, well, I just love the poster because it says that we have to cross racial lines, class lines, gender lines, and labor lines. And when this coalition comes together, you'll see a new, he says South, but I say a new America.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's marvelous. Catherine, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, I would just say I'm going to be real brief. The people who are helping to build that nuclear plant in Georgia are just responsible for what's going on there is the people that hire them. And the government, you know, Barack Obama is in Exelon's pockets. He always has been. Exelon.
So what's your point?
It's a nuclear industry, and it's evil. They'll kill you.
Okay. All right. Bob, thank you. Tom in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Can I tell you a personal little story that happened to me?
Yeah, you can do it in less than 2 minutes.
I can, certainly. I'm a retired tennis coach, teaching pro, like you have at your local club, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling you from Bradenton, Florida. I don't know Armin, but I'm just
okay.
Anyway, I got a part-time job just sweeping the court, the clay courts, and stringing tennis rackets. Now, they pay me $8 an hour before taxes. They wanted me to work 6 days a week, 2 hours a day, and they made me take a urine test before they would allow me to take jobs stringing tennis rackets and cleaning the courts.
Amazing.
Yeah, like, this is $8 an hour before tax. I mean, this was not above board.
Yeah.
And if you work there years and years and years, they never gave you a raise either.
Did they make you pay for your drug test?
No, they didn't, but as soon as I filled out my job application, they made me immediately go to a medical center and have a nurse right outside the door.
Wow. This is nuts. This is so invasive.
I really felt offended, Tom. I really felt violated.
Yeah.
I've been a head tennis pro for 30 years. I've taught in Germany, you know, and I had to go through this.
Yeah. Yeah, this is corporate America, increasingly corporate America's way of saying we own all the power. We will call the shots. You little peon mean nothing. And God forbid you're stringing tennis rackets when you're high or when you were high yesterday. Tom, that's a horrible story. Thank you for sharing it with us. And thanks for the call. Remarkable. 15 and. Maybe you should track down Armin and say hi. If you do, if you run across him, tell him. 15 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
You know, in addition to being unconstitutional, what drug testing does is it promotes a bad stereotype about drug use and being citizenship in America. Welcome back. Umberto in Hialeah, Florida. You wanted to talk about yesterday's congressional race in Florida. That's an interesting topic, too. I should have brought that up in my list of things. We have the next hour. But anyhow, Umberto, thanks for watching Free Speech TV, which, by the way, is in their pledge drive right now. Give them a call at 877-378-8669. Welcome to the program, Umberto. What's up?
I just wanted to make two major points as to why I believe the Democrats are in serious, serious trouble for the 2014 midterm elections. And first of all, let's face the facts, and that is that over the last 6 years, the right wing in this country has done such an unbelievably thorough job of demonizing President Obama and demonizing and vilifying practically everything that he says and everything that he wants to do, that in the minds of a lot of people, anything that he says or wants to do, they will not believe it.
Right.
And they just simply do not want to support it. And I think that's one of the major reasons why the Democrats are losing ground when it comes to 2014, is that a good example is what happened in Michigan with this commercial that the Koch brothers helped to fund, when the lady there was confronted by the Detroit newspaper and told her, you know, in actuality, you're going to save money if you choose an Obamacare plan. Her only response was, no, I don't want to believe it. I just do not want to believe it or accept it. And when you come down here to Florida, for example, and you ask people similar questions about Obamacare or about President Obama's policies, they'll tell you, no, I just do not want to believe anything that guy has to say. So what the Democrats are facing is the right wing has done such a thorough propaganda job of convincing people that President Obama and the Democrats are just plain evil. A lot of people will not believe anything that they have to say. Secondly, and I'll be quick, the Democrats seem to be so bewildered as to why they can't bring out their base of supporters to the polls, people like the poor, the working class, people who support social justice and economic justice issues.
And, well, and people who are in labor unions.
Exactly. And the simple reason is this. The Democratic Party, at least here in the South, I don't know about the rest of the country, Tom, but here in the South, the Democratic Party is not a progressive party. It is a party where most of its establishment and politicians are under the influence of the old DLC, you know, the Democratic Leadership Conference. And now they're conveniently repackaging themselves as the Third Way.
Right.
Well, the Third Way is not a progressive ideology. It is not a working class or social justice ideology, and you're not hearing a social justice message here in the South. How in the heck are you going to get the poor, the working class, and people who support those issues out to the polls when they don't seem to have a reason why they should go out to vote for a party that doesn't seem to be messaging what they are concerned about from day to day? I'm not sure how what's happening up there in the Northeast, Tom, but here in the South, the Democrats are in bad, bad shape, and I don't see them winning a lot of races, maybe in Virginia. But I don't see, as deeper into the South you go, I don't see them winning a lot of races.
I think that that's true right now at this moment in time, and it's happening all across the country, by the way. But as more and more young people and more people of color are coming into the voting rolls, as more and more people turn 18 and are eligible to vote, I think that this is changing very, very rapidly. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Harbin here with you. And Lee in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom, it's my turn. There's so much to say. Number one, thanks for being in the world and everyone that's called in. Excellent ideas. I thought I knew for sure what I wanted to say, but they've stirred so much emotion in me. You know, down here in Dallas, Texas, I often joke about we really need help because there are people down here that are trapped by these. They're worse than Tea Party. I don't know what you call it down here in Texas.
Yeah.
But anyway, they've got their foot on our neck. They've got us busy in hospitals like I have been for the past few months with my sister. The health care, we're fighting against all these things. They're making it where the liberals can't fight. The people that do want justice can't go vote. I had researched all my candidates, was looking forward to it. What happened? Another medical emergency, not adequate health care, have to go. You get the story. Now,
you had a, Lee, you had a comment on drug testing?
Yes, I'm a chronic pain patient. Now, I have had to undergo drug testing on and off over the past 15 years. I have found them to be inaccurate most of the time. I have tested positive for THC. When in fact I don't smoke it, but yet I am trying my best to be a vegan. And lo and behold, when I do research, there are certain foods when mixed together will make you test positive for THC. One of them is poppy seed. That's a myth, they say. It's not a myth.
No, poppy seeds will cause you to test positive for opiates because they actually contain small amounts of opiates.
Right. Well, they made me test positive THC. It didn't say opiates.
Interesting.
But the fact is, it is a violation. I have been a chronic pain since I was born. They tried to kill me when I was born by smashing my. Come on, stop it!
Yikes! Lee, I gotta move along. But thank you for the call, Jim in Hawaii. In Hawaii? Do I have that right?
Hobby. The Hobby. W is sounds like a B out here.
Okay. What's up?
Tom, love the show, but I wanted just to, you were talking about drug testing, and I had to tell you this one. I'm a merchant mariner officer, been working, actually started on the Great Lakes, of Michigan boy, but living out here now. But a friend of mine who I work with, who was a temporary employee of the company that I work for now, started a 3-month vacation with no guarantee that he was even going to go back to work, and within a few days after he was on vacation, the company called him to go have a drug test that he had to have done within 24 hours. And I was outraged. I just think that's totally illegal. But he
you will be drug tested when you're on vacation. That's insane.
I know. It's outrageous. And this, you know, he told me that. I couldn't believe it. Of course, they said they would pay him to go, you know, give him 8 hours pay to go get drug tested. But I just can't believe that's even legal.
Yeah. Whether it's legal or not, I mean, the Supreme Court has by and large ruled that, you know, employers and government can do anything they want with regard to this stuff. I think it's wrong. Just because the Supreme Court has ruled it, I don't think it's right. Jim, thanks for sharing that story. Seth, you have a story in Bourbonnais, Illinois?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
Yeah. Okay, so I work 6 hours a day, or 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, driving a forklift. So when I get home at night, I like to, you know, smoke a little bit of pot and, you know, go to bed. And at least half of the employees here do that. And our employer knows this, but they are forced to drug test us, and they know that we have our ways of passing it. So it's just a waste of money, and it's a waste of time.
Very interesting. What's your, if you don't mind my asking, what are the more common ways of passing a drug test if you do smoke pot?
The best way to do it is to just carry either synthetic urine or one of a friend's sample with you.
Yeah,
and
have your wife pee in a cup and
exactly
put
right.
it in a bottle and stick it in your pocket.
Exactly right. They have temperature strips, and you warm it up with a lighter. I've got an aluminum bottle, and once it's 98 degrees, it's that easy.
Yeah. Or
so,
keep it
but,
if you kept it taped
also,
to your stomach, would that keep it at body temperature, or maybe that's not enough?
If you're a male, then you can wear tidy whiteies and keep in the family jewels.
Yeah,
keep it nice and warm.
Okay, very interesting, Seth. Thank you. I guess I'm very fortunate. I've made it, you know, through six decades of my life and never been drug tested. But then on the other hand, I've always owned my own businesses. I just find this amazing. Gary in El Paso, Texas, you got a story for us?
Yeah, I was just mentioning or just listening to what you're saying about the drug testing, and the railroads now are starting a different way of getting back at us. They're starting to put inward-facing cameras into the cabs now so they can watch us while we're working.
Wow. So they're, as opposed to looking out, as you're a train engineer, so it's like you've got
right.
no privacy.
Yeah, no, they're going to have two cameras in the cab watching the conductor and the engineer both.
Amazing.
It's
amazing.
Bone use and all that kind of stuff, but there's other ways of preventing it than that. You know, that's not going to stop anything.
Yep. Gary, thanks for sharing the story. That's a good one. Charlotte in Somerville, South Carolina. We got a minute to the end of the hour here, Charlotte. You had a story?
Okay. I worked with an OR nurse one time who tested positive for opiates. Turned out this woman, you know, generally she generated about 4 poppy seed muffins a break every day.
Uh-huh.
Now, she was a little strange. But when they took her blood test, they didn't do enough dilutions. And we had to, you know, fortunately the OR head nurse had her retest, raised enough percent, they retested her, and they redid the test.
Yeah, because the poppy seed muffins were triggering an opiate alarm.
That's correct. They will.
Yeah, they will. And people lose the jobs. Their careers get ruined. They go through enormous amounts of time and hassle. And all of this for what? I mean, you know, to if somebody is impaired, it should be evident. There should, you know, this is one of the jobs of management. Thank you, Charlotte, for the call. This, if not, it certainly should be one of the jobs of management, or a safety officer in a hospital or in an airline or whatever it may be, is look for people who are impaired, because there's a lot of things beyond drug abuse that can cause impairment. I've listed several of them. I'm sure there's many more. Anyhow, we'll be back after the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, Total Protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Well, we've been talking about drug testing. I think I've hit a nerve. Every single line is full. I'll be taking your calls on this in just a moment. This is nuts. That in order to have a job in America, you have to pee in a cup or give blood. And now the American Society of Addiction something or other, what is it here? The American Society of Addiction Medicine says we need increased use of random testing. It means testing not only urine, but other matrices such as blood and oral fluid and hair and nails and sweat and breath. I mean, when are we going to start doing surgery looking for drugs? It's like, so much for the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? Yeah, I'm willing to, I am willing to trust the coworkers of pilots or bus drivers or whatever it may be. I'm willing to trust them that the people around them are not impaired. And say, well, what about long haul truck drivers? Well, maybe you could make a case there because they're not surrounded by other people. And anybody can fake it for 5 minutes while they're at a truck stop, I suppose, when they're refueling or something like that. But, again, there are a lot of other things that cause impairment beyond drug use. The principal one being a lack of sleep, which is certainly a problem for long-haul drivers. I just think that when Nixon declared his war on drugs back in the early 70s, we went insane. And it became this incredible profit opportunity for the private prison industry, which really emerged during the Reagan administration, and for the drug testing industry, which is now a multi-billion-dollar industry that has their own lobbyists pushing for more and more of these laws to buy more and more of their products. And it's a waste of money. We're spending billions of dollars a year testing each other for drug use, and it's not producing any measurable benefit. Or if it does produce some small benefit, you have to ask, is it worth billions of dollars when those billions of dollars could instead be putting kids through college? Really? This is our priority? Meanwhile, the managing editor of WorldNet Daily, Dave Kupelian, yesterday told Republicans that they should impeach and remove President Obama if they take the Senate. This is interesting. If the Republicans take the Senate and hold the House in the 2014 election, impeach Obama. I mean, they wouldn't even try it in the House right now because they know that they wouldn't get a conviction in the Senate. Well, actually, they might try it in the House. God only knows what these guys would do, right? I mean, they're just nuts. And then Paul Ryan comes out and he says, and I quote, a lot of poor people are born lazy. Right. Now, why would he say that? Why would Paul and not just poor people? He said, and I quote, in our inner cities, we have a real culture problem in these communities. Quote. We have just got this tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value in the culture of work. And so there's a real culture problem here that has to be dealt with. And then he quotes a guy by the name of Charles Murray. Charles Murray believes that African Americans overall as a population are less intelligent than whites because of genetics. Right. And quoting him, Paul Ryan then says, quote, a lot of poor people are born lazy. End quote. This is obscene. So, anyhow, this is the second anniversary of the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. And as at the time that we're promoting this, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Trade Agreement, Free Trade Agreement, the SHAFTA Agreement, also known as the TPP, at the time that we're promoting SHAFTA, we can go back now 2 years and look at CAFCA, at the Korean Free Trade Agreement, or KAFCA, maybe it should be called. And U.S. exports are down 11% to Korea. Imports from Korea are up, and our deficit with Korea has ballooned 47%. Read it over at citizen.org. Absolutely bizarre. A right-wing pastor is worried that Satan is using Frozen to turn kids into gay. To turn kids gay. Right. Another one says America is cursed because ancient Egyptians dedicated this continent to Baal. Oh, my. Interesting article in the Financial Times about how the headline is why we see bosses as parents, but it's about how people kind of reinvent their family relationships in the workplace. I don't know if that's worth really getting into or not. And that it appears, this is the Bloomberg News. It was also the New York Times. The largest U.S., I'm quoting from Bloomberg here, the largest U.S.-based companies added $206 billion. They stashed $206 billion more dollars offshore this last year. Quoting Bloomberg, parking earnings in low-tax countries until Congress gives them a reason not to. They have $1.95 trillion that they have stashed outside the United States, which means that they're not paying taxes on it, which means it's not going to fix roads and bridges and schools and pay for scholarships for kids to go to college and build our college. None of that. The worst offenders? Apple, Microsoft, IBM. Not in that order. Actually, in the U.S.-based company, in the order, the worst offenders, Microsoft, Apple, and IBM. Here's one of the ways that these companies do this. You manufacture a product overseas and say it costs a buck to manufacture over there, and you're going to sell it in the U.S. for, say, $500. It's probably the spread is not quite that large. Let's say it costs $100 to make overseas, and you're going to sell it in the U.S. for $500. On the other hand, if it was a piece of software, it might cost a buck to make it overseas, to print the CD. But whatever. So you take that $1 product, and instead of selling it to your United States division for a dollar or for even $2, you sell it to the U.S. division for $495. So now the Chinese division or the overseas division is making all the profit. The U.S. division is showing very little profit, or you could sell it to the U.S. division, frankly, for $505, then the U.S. division sells it for $500, they show a loss, they take a tax write-off. And the foreign division is showing a huge profit, which they get to keep at a foreign bank without paying any U.S. taxes. And this is how these foreign corporations are gaming our legal system, our tax system, and ultimately screwing America. And you and me, they're not paying their taxes. So, gee, we have no money to pay for long-term unemployment. We have no money to pay for health care. We have no money to pay for our kids to go to college. We have no money to repair our bridges and roads. Because Republicans in Congress will not allow us to close these tax loopholes so that Apple and Microsoft and IBM end up paying their damn taxes on products that they're making overseas to sell here in the United States, which is not only, by the way, a tax problem, it's also a trade policy problem. At the very least, we should be collecting taxes when those products arrive in the at the borders of the United States with tariffs.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Your calls and thoughts on all of these pieces of the news of the day, right after this. And welcome back, 15 minutes past the hour. Janice in Carmichael, California, watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up, Janice?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Janice here in actually Sacramento. I want to thank you again for all that you do for us.
No need.
I am
thank
a veteran.
For your words.
Thank you. I'm a veteran, and I wanted to tell you about a letter I received in January, and it's all patients. All I'm 50% disability, so right. I do use the VA.
Right.
Unfortunately, I don't have to because I do have other insurance. However, all patients receiving medications have to have, face-to-face visits with their provider, drug testing, and sign in one-time opiate agreement. This opiate agreement is about 2 pages long with 14 points in it. And I wanted to point out some of the points that we have to sign before we can receive any kind of medication.
This is like to get penicillin, you've got to do this?
No, to get any kind of pain medication.
Oh, okay. All right.
I received the lowest on Vicodin.
Right.
And although I don't even take it every day, there'd be a week that I won't take it. However, because I do receive it, I have to sign this opiate agreement,
okay.
And this agreement is 2 pages long. And some of the points are, I understand that I have to be available for, let's see, urinalysis within a 72-hour period. I understand that I have to make scheduled appointments and that periodically, the California Department of Justice will be contacted, as well as other state and federal agencies, to ensure that prescriptions for narcotics are not being filled from other physicians or outside of the VA. I'm reading this quote. I understand I would be expected to show up with all my medications for a pill count. And also, this opiate agreement is that when you take a urinalysis, if you don't have the right amount of opiates or you know, the narcotic, whatever it is, they put in Vicodin. If you don't have the right amount, that means that, for instance, if I go a week or two without taking it, that means that I could be selling it. And that could put me under suspicion, yes. And let's see. And then I understand this will be reviewed for clinical follow-up visits. And I understand that if I do not receive my pain relief, I will have and take, and I have over the amount of medication that's supposed to be in your system that I will be taken off this medication. How I handled this was I called the VA and told them that they could word this differently, that this is draconian, it's intrusive. I'm a veteran, I fought in the Persian Gulf, and other veterans, now, I just told them to take me off of all this medication. I don't need it. I don't want it. And just take me off.
Right.
And that's, you know, that.
Well, you're in California. But, medical marijuana is actually apparently a fairly decent painkiller.
Yes, yes. But I don't smoke any. I'm clean and sober.
Yeah.
I don't do
okay.
anything. But, however, this is, there are other veterans who are in serious chronic pain.
Yeah.
And if they... they are, this agreement, you're signing away your constitutional rights.
I agree. Janice, thank you for sharing your story with us, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Over at Democratic Underground, they're reporting that a guy working on an oil rig off the coast of Malaysia saw the Malaysian Airlines plane go down, and he provides all the exact location and longitude and latitude and what he saw and all this kind of stuff. And it's quite interesting. Hopefully somebody will get over to where he is and look around. I still remember yesterday people calling in saying it was space aliens. I was interested, surprised actually, by the number of people who thought that's a possibility. I mean, I could see space aliens, maybe if they're out there saying, hi, we're here. But snatching an airplane, that's a little, you know, going over the top. That's like saying, you got to have a drug test if you're going to work here. Michael in Roseville, Illinois. Hey, Michael, you got a drug testing horror story?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air, Michael.
Oh, no, this is, yeah, Michael, how's it going? Thank you for listening. Actually, I recently fell on the ice at my job, and I'm a truck driver, so I do a DOT drug test every 2 years anyways, which is no biggie. The thing that was messed up, though, is when I fell, we haven't been assaulting because, you know, the economy the way it is, they were trying to pinch some pennies. Well, I fell on their driveway, and I go in, I tell them, you know, hey, I hurt my arm. They're like, okay, no problem. They send me in for a drug test.
What?
And it wasn't just a drug test. It was a drug test because on the form that they gave me that they fill out, it says pre-accident, post-accident, or random drug test. They mark the random drug test thing. And when I asked our accountant, what's up with this? They're like, yeah, yeah, this will cover everything.
Yeah. What they're trying to do is prevent pain out. No, I think they're trying to prevent having to pay out on a workman's comp claim. You were injured on the job, and you were arguably injured as a consequence of their negligence, so you have the basis for a lawsuit. And if they can demonstrate that you had drugs in your system, they can use that as a defense by saying he was high, that's why he fell. It wasn't because we didn't salt the ice, and he was high, that's why he fell. It's not because he was on the job, and therefore we don't have to pay workman's comp. Or we don't have to pay, you know, a punitive damage for failing to provide a safe workplace. And
well, Tom, I just wanted to let you know I very much appreciate listening to you on the radio, and I just wanted to let that be known that there is things like that happening out there as well. And
that's amazing.
I would almost imagine that it would be extremely illegal to do something like this. But
well, it's, you know, welcome to America with a K. I mean, this is the kind, you know, people say, oh, why would somebody sue an employer? You know, you hear about these stories of abuse. We actually had this happen to us. We owned an advertising agency in Atlanta back in the 90s, and we hired a woman and didn't do much of a background check on her. Called a couple of employers, but not a big deal. And 2 weeks on the job, we had a printing press in the basement. You know, there's big cases of paper, and she goes over and picks up this case of paper, and Louise, who was her supervisor, my wife, says, don't pick that up. We've got people who do that. It doesn't look like you could even physically pick that up. And so she put down the box. The next day, she doesn't come in. She's at the doctor's office, and it was a workman's comp claim. And so Louise called up the workman's comp company and said, you know, what's the story here? And they said, this is the third job where she has gone to work, injured herself within 3 weeks, and claimed at least a year's worth of workman comp benefits. And we would recommend that you authorize us to pay her because the lawsuit will be more expensive. So we ended up, you know, paying this workman's comp claim that was unnecessary. So you hear these stories that kind of, and this is a story that villainizes the employee, but here, well, you've got an employer who, you know, if I was working there, I would be almost inclined to say, I'm going to call a lawyer and take you guys down for trying to you know, I think, frankly, Michael, you have the basis for a lawsuit. And, you know, not that I'm recommending that you do that, but it's like, boy, is that an insult? You know, I've been injured, and instead of sending me to the clinic to get an X-ray on my arm, whether it's injured or not, they send me to a drug testing facility. That's nuts.
Yeah, and that was like the big like punch in the face because, like I said, I get a DOT test, so I get drug tested anyways.
Right.
So it's like
this is
why, what?
Yeah, they're just trying to avoid liability. That's all it is. Michael, thanks for the call. Kirk in Calnavari, Nevada. Hey, Kirk.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Happy post vacation. You look fresh.
Thank you. I feel refreshed.
Well, listen, I've called before, you know. I was a pipe fitter and a welder and lived in the Chicago area, and I've been drug tested 60 to 70 times. In fact, on one, I was working at Dresden Nuclear Power Station. on the maintenance staff, and I took the drug test. This is when I first started. I was there 3.5 years. Then I took the drug test, and 8 days later, the computer kicked my name out, and I had to go take a random. I was picked for a random. Well, my boss comes up, and the superintendent, who I knew, and he said, "Hey, you know, this is..." I said, "Hey, there's no problem. I'm not mad or anything." I said, "I'll go pee in a bottle for as long as I'm getting paid for it."
Right.
And so that's what I did. But, I mean, you're right. It's a money scam. And any job now, any job that we go on, whether it's a nuclear plant or corn products or regardless of heating and air conditioning job, whatever, you got a drug test, you know.
That's nuts.
But people are getting around it. I mean, but it's all about the money. You know, yeah. You just follow the money.
Yeah. Well, that's my point. I mean, my friend Stanley, I saw this guy get rich. Rich is not quite the right word. He was making a very good living. The equivalent in today's dollars of probably $100, $200, maybe $300,000 a year. Just selling these little $10 drug testing kits in the back of High Times magazine for drug users to find out if they were being sold stuff that was pure or not and what the purity was, you know, for cocaine and for pot. And then he made, at my recollection, is over $100 million when he sold his drug testing company to a company that became one of the big drug testing companies. I mean, it's 15 cents worth of chemicals. Kirk,
you're
thanks for
listening
calling.
To the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
15 cents worth of chemicals, and you sell it to the company for 40, 50 bucks. You get the government to mandate it. This is a scam. This is like the private prison scam. The good, the bad, and the very, very hyperboreanly ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, ecowine.com. The good, Jeff Dodds. When a little girl asked this North Dakota pharmacist if he could do something about the monsters under her bed, he didn't scoff. He took action and whipped together a batch of his very own monster spray, complete with instructions to spray around the room at night before bed and repeat if necessary. Now, if Jeff could only whip up a batch of some anti-bankster spray, then he'd really be the best pharmacist in the world. The bad, Kevin Swanson. While most moviegoers and critics agree that Disney's Frozen is one of the best animated feature films to come along in quite some time, far-right pastor Kevin Swanson disagrees. He thinks it's part of a secret evil plot to turn American kids gay. Seriously, take a listen.
Friends, this is evil. Just evil. I wonder if people are thinking, you know, I think this cute little movie is going to indoctrinate my 5-year-old to be a lesbian or treat homosexuality or bestiality in a light sort of way. I wonder if the average parent going to see Frozen is thinking that way. You know, I wonder if they're just walking in and saying, yeah, let's get my 5-year-old and 7-year-old indoctrinated early.
Kevin, no, they're not thinking that way. But you apparently are, and that's really weird. And the very, very ugly, Kyle Tasker. The Republican New Hampshire state representative is under fire today for posting an unbelievably offensive cartoon to his Facebook page. The cartoon, which shows a picture of two people engaged in a sex act, has a caption reading, 50,000 battered women, and I still eat mine plain. Tasker apparently posted the comic while defending his fellow New Hampshire representative Mark Warden, who made headlines last year when he said that a lot of people like being in abusive relationships. Right. That is very, very ugly. That's incredible. David in Addison, Illinois. Finally, somebody who wants to disagree with me. You think drug testing is a good thing?
Yes, absolutely. I actually kind of am shocked that no one wants to disagree with you on this. Look at it from the employer's perspective, like the previous caller who tripped and fell. If he was high, then the employer absolutely shouldn't have to pay because he was high and he tripped and fell probably because he was high. Why should you limit an employer's right to do that? Especially if it's a private business. I mean, maybe you have an argument for government drug testing, even though I don't think that would apply either. But as a private employer, to limit their ability to limit their own liability when someone else does something wrong or illegal.
Right. Now you are making
the true
libertarian argument. And my response to that is that if we were in a labor market where people actually had the choice of employers and they could easily say, you know, I don't want to work for you because you drug test people. I'm going to go work for this guy over here. And employers were competing based on the fact that they did or didn't drug test. Then, yeah, I would agree with you. But that's not the world in which we live. The world in which we live right now is that coercion is associated with employment. Employers are in the catbird seat. They do control their employees. Employees are desperate for jobs. There's for every, you know, anybody, everybody knows that if they lose their job, there's a long line of people out there who are willing to take it. And so they will put up with all sorts of indignities. And I would think if you're genuinely a libertarian, David, that you are opposed to coercion.
Oh, I'm absolutely opposed to coercion. I don't identify strictly with libertarianism, but my
well, this is coercion. This is an employer coercing their employee to surrender their privacy. There's a lot of ways to tell, A, there's a lot of ways to tell if somebody's impaired beyond a drug test. B, a drug test is actually not even the best way to tell if somebody's impaired. It only tells you whether or not they've used drugs. And C, there's a lot of things that cause impairment beyond drug use. For example, lack of sleep. If your logic is correct, then the next step for employers is to get those little drop cam things that they advertise all over the internet and stick them in everybody's bedroom so that employers can check up and make sure that people are actually asleep for 8 hours every night.
Now, let me respond to all that. First off, it's not coercion unless you're also willing to concede that every single tax incentive we've ever had is coercion, and every single government program is coercion. This is absolutely behavior modification, and I'd argue that it's beneficial behavior modification. Encouraging employees not to do drugs, which is, first off, illegal in almost every state, and to not be impaired on the job is something that we should encourage, especially in industries like trucking. And that one construction worker guy, like, you don't want those people to be high or drunk or lacking sleep. And
no, you don't. And that's why part of the job of a supervisor is to measure impairment. I mean, have somebody walk a line, right? Like the old drunk test that police used to use before they got breathalyzers. Can you walk a straight line? That's going to tell you whether that person has some sort of neurological disorder that might be creeping up on them, whether they're pre-diabetic and it's creeping up on them and they're starting to lose sensation in their feet. I mean, these are all things. If you got a construction worker, you know, working 20 stories up on iron, you want to know these things. Or whether that person didn't have enough sleep last night. These are things that can cause serious impairment. But instead, we're drug testing people, and so supervisors aren't even doing those tests because they've got this false sense of security and safety, thinking, oh, yeah, everybody's drug tested. Everything's fine.
I'll agree with you that in cases where supervisors don't do their jobs, that's on the supervisor as well. They should be absolutely measuring for impairment. But the whole walk in a line argument you just gave me is proof positive why we actually need drug testing. Because I don't know if you know this, but anecdotally, I have a couple friends who can be trashed out of their minds and walk a straight line and absolutely fake it. And in an economy where we do have, where it's not, you know, free labor, where you can go work wherever you want, people have an absolute incentive to fake it. So if you don't get enough sleep, or if you're high, or
David, I also know people who can drink a lot or who can use a lot of drugs and hold it together for a while, but not for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, in the company of people who have come to know them well. Hello? We didn't just have a phone system crash, did we? Okay. David, I have lost you. Let's see if David in Mackinac, Illinois is on the line. David, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Apparently that David just lost his phone. Anyhow, what's up?
Shucks. I was disappointed. The question that I have is, in states where marijuana use is legal, whether it be for medical or recreational use, are companies allowed to test and discharge someone when they take a drug test and find marijuana in their system?
Yes. Yes, that is still going on in Colorado and Washington State. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And where it becomes really problematic is particularly with something like pot is what if you just happened to walk through a room where somebody was smoking pot? Or, you know, what if, I mean, there's a lot of ways to, it's basically secondhand smoke exposure, you know, and it doesn't have to be enough to get you high. And it'll stay in your system because pot is, THC is fat soluble rather than water soluble. And so it takes a month to completely discharge from your body. And in some cases, even longer than that. And you know, it could be a completely innocent exposure.
Right. Okay. I had never heard that addressed, and so
yeah.
This
is actually one of the things that these states are having to confront. Carlo in Chicago, listen to WCPT. You wanted to disagree with me about drug testing. Convince me.
Yeah. All right, Tom. I listen to your show every single day. I'm actually a safety supervisor at O'Hare Airport. I'm actually on the clock right now. I listen on the radio. And there's more than just the privacy of the person who is choosing to do the drug. It's all the safety of all the passengers on these airplanes. It's very difficult to observe all my employees at all times. So if there is an incident where they hit an aircraft or hit a piece of equipment, it's important to see if they were under the influence.
Right.
Also, it deters other employees from losing their job or injuring passengers. It's just a comfort level. Knowing that there is no one that is on the airfield that is under the influence.
Carlo, the fundamental principle of the Fourth Amendment is that you have the right to the privacy of your person until somebody swears under oath that they believe that you might have done something wrong. So I could understand where you, as the safety supervisor, if somebody is driving a truck and they run into an airplane, and somebody else comes along and says that person was behaving erratic, or they just drove into an airplane. I mean, that might be evidence that they are impaired. And under those circumstances, I would defend your right to ask that person to take a drug test. That makes sense to me. But random drug tests or routine drug tests, why?
Well, random drug tests. So if a person, for example, who has a job, and they're important out here to be sober at all times. So if they're going to be going at a party, and there is drugs, whatever the drugs, whether the legal drugs or heavy drugs, doesn't matter.
Can you identify, Carlo, any time when anybody has been put at risk because somebody was using drugs? I mean, there's never been an airplane crash as a consequence of a commercial airplane crash in the United States as a result of a drunk or high pilot. Never happened.
Right.
Is this a real problem? Is it really worth spending hundreds or tens of billions of dollars on?
For even if it saves one airplane going down, I agree. Yes,
well, if it did save one airplane, but one airplane has never gone down.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But, Carlo, I understand your logic, and it's the logic that a lot of people apply. I just think that we've gotten hysterical about drugs the same way we got hysterical about terrorism. Welcome back 15 minutes before the hour. And Pete in Beaver Springs, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call, and thank you and your staff for the great work you do.
Well, thank you, Pete. It's not necessary to say that.
I'm looking at your Fourth Amendment here and security in person. From time to time, we all submit to testing one way or another, driver's license, health professionals. It's testing for competency. I'm carrying this one step further.
Mm-hmm.
My grad school, I did Miller's analogies and a CPI. My grad school is in counseling, psych, and you don't want someone floridly psychotic, I mean, counseling somebody else. So my question to you,
And
I would love to see this happen, is that an invasion of the Fourth Amendment for people in our government from the president on down to complete the MMPI? Thank you for taking the call and tag your rant.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. The MMPI, for people who don't know what Pete was talking about, is the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, and it is one of the tests that measures emotional competence and whether you're floridly psychotic or not, I suppose, among other things. And that's a good question. I don't think that taking the MMPI or frankly any other kind of test, which is a measure of your ability to do something or your competence as a precursor to getting a job, is surrendering the security of your body in a way that is relatively involuntary. Now, I could go back to my logic about, you know, a bad job market and it's hard to get a job, and so you could say that there's coercion associated with jobs right now. But I still, you know, this is something where the person is demonstrating, you have to demonstrate competence. The MMPI might be pushing it, because frankly, the MMPI can measure things that I'm not sure that an employer has the right to know. But a good, you know, if you're a decent analyst or a decent therapist or a decent psychologist or psychiatrist, and you're interviewing somebody to be a colleague of yours, to work in this field, or to be a student who's going to work in this field, you should certainly have your radar tuned well enough that somebody who's, to use your phrase, floridly psychotic would be apparent to you without an MMPI or without any other kind of testing. I mean, you know, it's just the Rorschach test has been in some ways kind of debunked is the wrong word, but that's subject to a lot more variability in terms of interpretation of outcome. Unless somebody is truly, you know, every single picture they see, you know, oh, yes, that's another dead body. Oh, another dead body. Oh, boy, look at that dead body. Then you know you have a problem. Interesting. It's a really interesting question. It's like, I forget the name of the caller. My apologies. But what you brought up is the question of where do we draw the line? And it used to be we draw the line in observed behavior, right? An employer notices an employee behaving in a way that seems irrational or incompetent, and they challenge that behavior, and they can fire that employee. Now it's drug testing. What's the middle ground? Good question. 10 minutes before the hour, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Find out what's going on in the world today. It's brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give the gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. And Ellen Ratner is with us. And Ellen, we haven't talked since you got back from South Sudan.
No, we haven't. And in fact, we've sort of expanded the goat program a little bit because the people in South Sudan are so war-torn that they're hungry. Really hungry, and there are teachers, et cetera, who are living, you know, on not big wages, so we're trying to help some of the teachers out. I mean, it's not a pretty situation over there, to say the least. And there's, of course, a fight for resources, which is the oil situation. The rebels are not giving up. I was actually able to take down the tail of a plane at the airport where a tank was coming out of it. Looks like the Ugandans, who are supporting the current president, President Kiir, are renting Russian planes and unloading tanks. There were two at the edge of the runway that I saw in South Sudan.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yeah, not a pretty situation at all. Very different than when we were there in the Darfur area and South Sudan 6 years ago. This month, actually.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it was. It was. And that I did my show, the show live from there with you.
Yeah, you did. Well, you're always welcome to come back and do it live again.
I will. I will one of these days. In the meantime, Ellen, what else is going on in the world?
Okay, so there's a lot going on.
Glad you made it back safely.
Yes, there was a little dicey one day because we were up in northern Bahr Ghazal, and we heard that there had been some killing in Juba, which is the capital city, if you recall.
Yep.
And it was actually done at a military base. It was overpay. At least 12 people were killed. And I was thinking, well, we're going to have to charter right into Kenya, but things calmed down, so we got back in there.
Yeah, you and I have both been in Juba. In fact, that's where we hung out with.
Beautiful downtown Juba.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of beautiful downtowns, the president met with the prime minister today of Ukraine, and they are saying that they are not going to accept, the White House is saying they're not going to accept any referendum on the Crimea. And I will tell you this, that they printed twice as many ballots as there are people in Crimea. So what does that tell you? It tells you that whatever happens is not going to be exactly above board. So the United States has already announced that they're not going to take the results of this Crimean.
Is anybody sending election observers? The Carter Center, the UN?
Oh, yeah. There are lots of election observers going on.
Yeah.
But, again, you can observe, and if somebody takes the ballot box and does something different,
right.
You can observe all you want. And that's certainly the problem. I've seen that in South Sudan.
So you're pretty skeptical of this.
I'm very skeptical. We also know that in terms of Ukraine, a couple other interesting things. There are some senators, a bipartisan group of people led by Senator John McCain, will be going to Uganda. Ukraine tomorrow. And this is to receive updates on the country and, of course, the independence referendum, which is scheduled, by the way, for Sunday on Crimea. That is also going, the European Union is going to consider exempting Ukraine from paying tariffs on goods exported to Europe. As you know, there's 28 member countries of the European Union. This was announced by the EU Commission president, who said this could save the Ukraine up to $693 U.S. dollars per year by not having to pay any of these tariffs. And they're trying to do that to ally Ukraine more with the West.
So basically they're creating a free trade zone between Europe and Ukraine.
That's right, much, I'm sure, to the disappointment of Russia. So this is going to be an interesting issue. You know something, I got to tell you, the one person who always said that he could deal with President Putin was Bush 43.
Right.
My view is, I hate to say it, as much as I didn't like Bush, bring him back into the mix.
Well, that's interesting.
They actually had a decent relationship.
Yeah, the problem is because he's a Republican, there's so much partisanship here. The Republicans are using this as a cudgel to beat up Obama. You got Lindsey Graham going, "Oh, Putin's doing it because he was weak." Well, what is, you know, the thing in North Georgia happened with South Ossetia and Abkhazistan or whatever it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
yeah,
Bush was
right.
Weak.
I mean, if this is not handled well, I've been quoting you a lot. This could turn into something really bad.
Yeah, this could be a World War One, an Archduke Ferdinand thing.
Exactly. That is happening on that front. Now, as you know, Alex Sink lost the Florida district.
She being the Democrat, yes.
She being the Democrat by 1.9 percentage points.
But this is a district that for 30 years was held by a Republican.
Right. Even though they voted for the Republican spin as well, they voted for Obama.
But by 2 points.
There's another general election that happens, of course, in November. And Steve Israel from the Democratic Campaign Committee suggested to Alex Sink that she run again in November. And I think she's probably going to wind up doing that.
Good. Good.
The gas explosion in Harlem, very interesting. Charlie Rangel called it Harlem's 9/11. And it is interesting that the Secretary of Transportation was speaking to a lot of the transportation people in different states here on Monday, and he called what is going on with the nation's infrastructure termites in the basement. And so we don't know all the facts on the gas explosion in Harlem. We do know that it could possibly be because of the infrastructure, the building, et cetera, or even the pipeline, the gas pipeline going in there was not up to speed. And it's a very serious problem. I had a friend that was actually in a park on the other side of Harlem near the Hudson River, and she felt the explosion.
Wow. That's not good.
It was a huge explosion.
Yeah.
Secretary Sebelius testified before the House Ways and Means Committee on premiums. She said that premiums probably will go up, but not very much, a smaller pace than we've seen since 2010. Then she was asked how many people signed up for Obamacare. She said, "I can't tell you that because I don't know that. This is not Medicare or Medicaid, sir. This is a private plan in a private market." And people forget that, Tom.
There you go. They do. Very easily and very quickly and very conveniently sometimes. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
And so I'm so glad that you are back safe. Great work you do. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Alan Turing's theory of morphogenesis has been proven. This is fascinating. This is the chemical basis of morphogenesis. He said that... I'm gonna have to read this, mark it up, and digest it, and give it back to you in plain English, because the paper that I'm reading here is a little more than that. But basically, this whole concept of morphogenetic fields or morphogenic fields, why does a cell, how does one cell become our body, and why do some cells become liver cells and some cells become kidney cells, and how do they know what to do? And Turing had a theory about that, and this is really interesting. Apparently, it's just been confirmed. I'm just kind of kicking around the science news of the world, and my computer just went into space again. This drives me nuts. It's been going on for a couple of days. So there's that. There is this ongoing conversation we've had. Nobody has yet convinced me that we should be drug testing people. I just have to say, I am saying drug testing has a whole bunch of problems associated with it. Number one, it creates a false sense of security. People who are in supervisory positions who should be monitoring people looking for the whole wide range of things that can cause impairment, from lack of sleep to marital problems to incipient psychosis, to personality disorders, to neurological diseases, to people becoming diabetic and starting to lose sensation in their extremities. I mean, this is just a whole. If you're talking about things like being a bus driver or an airline pilot or a truck driver, these are all things that can, or a metal worker in a nuclear power plant 30 stories up, putting in the framework for the containment vessel. And these are all things that can cause impairment. And now, increasingly, I believe we have supervisors who say, I don't have to worry about that. We're drug testing people. Right. Secondly, you get false positives. One of the people who works right here in this studio with me has a cousin who lost his career in a branch of our military because of a false positive drug test. This happens, frequently. But no commercial airline has ever gone down because a pilot was high or even drunk, and alcohol is a fairly common drug of choice. Number three, and I think most important, the Constitution says that, now this applies to the government, of course, but if the government is mandating this in various industries, you could argue that it's the government. The Constitution says, you shall be secure in your person. That's your body. Unless somebody raises a hand and swears under oath that you have committed a crime in their opinion, and a judge determines that there's probable cause based on that testimony to search you. So my response to anybody who wants me to pee in a cup would be, give me a warrant. And I would say that should be my employee's response to me. And then the other thing is that this is, you know, as I started this show out talking about how, you know, I had a friend back in the 70s, a fellow by the name of Stanley, who was a chemist, and he used to sell, he was selling do-it-yourself drug kits in the back of High Times magazine, 15 cents worth of chemicals. He'd sell it for $10 plus $5.95 shipping and handling. Cost him 40 cents to mail them. He was making a fortune. He was making a couple $100,000 a year. And this was for drug users. This wasn't, you know, hey, test your employees, test your kids. This was test your pot and see if it's strong enough, or make sure that it's not contaminated with something, or test your cocaine and see how pure it is. And that was in the early 70s, and that was pretty much, those are the only drug tests around. And then Nixon started his drug war, and we started throwing people in prison for it. And in order to justify that, all this hysteria grew out of it and just went nuts. Don in Houston, Texas. You're a commercial airline pilot?
Yeah, Tom. Greetings, Professor 141, Pilot 136 here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You are well.
Thank you.
Been to China a lot. Yeah, back in the early days, I've been pilot for 25 years with the airlines. And in the early days, we were kind of responsible. Well, we were responsible for making sure that our coworkers were not impaired.
Right.
And we knew we were the last line of defense. So if somebody was, and it's extremely rare, I don't think I've ever seen it, but if somebody was acting impaired, it was our responsibility to call them out, get them to professional standards, employee assistance, et cetera, keep them from even getting to the airport, and take care of the issue. Now it's easier for people to just look the other way and say, oh, well, drug testing will get them.
Yeah.
And I think that in the process, it's actually made it less safe.
So you, as a commercial pilot, believe that drug testing has actually made the aviation environment less safe?
I do. I do, because now supervisors or coworkers are more inclined to just look the other way and let the drug test take care of it.
It's that false sense of security that I was mentioning.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It makes perfect sense.
Now, I always, when I get randomly tested, I always put on the form under duress, Fourth Amendment, U.S. Constitution.
Wow. And nobody's punished you for that. Of course, you know, airline pilot.
They give me the evil eye, but I have not got any other feedback beyond that.
Yeah.
They do tell us that we have a choice. They say it's legal because we have a choice. The choice is we can take the drug test, or it's considered an automatic positive and we forfeit our career. But it's a choice.
Yeah, right. See, that's where I would say there's force. Duress is not the coercion being used.
Yes, absolutely.
That's extraordinary. Don, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
One quick question.
Yeah.
Did they have election observers in Florida?
Say that again?
Did they have election observers in Florida?
Oh, for Alex Sink's election? Probably not. Probably.
Or did they do it on the electronic voting machines where it's all, a mystery?
Yes, I'm quite sure that that's the case. And so we are not without our own problems here. Excellent point, Don. Thank you for calling and making it. And apparently, Alex Sink, the Democrat who lost down there, was running on a campaign of I can work with Republicans and we need to cut fraud and waste in government. And I'm sorry, if you're going to be running on a Republican platform as a Democrat, you really don't deserve to win. Dan in Chelan, Washington. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
I was in the railroad industry for 21 years.
And I'm guessing that you encountered drug testing toward the tail end of that.
Yes. And the problem I had with it was the fact that it wasn't testing for willful use. It was just testing you for exposure. Because
right.
with the edibles that are available nowadays, for marijuana edibles, you could be exposed to something at any time and not even know it.
Well, and beyond that, there are things that'll trip false positives, or not even false positives. You eat poppy seeds, you are consuming a very, very, very small amount of opium. And
absolutely.
And it'll show up in your bloodstream. In fact, when Louise and I lived in Germany, one of the favorite desserts in Kulmbach, in this part of town Germany where we lived, the favorite dessert was called mooncake. And it's black poppy seeds mixed with sugar and turned into a paste. And it's just thick in a pie crust. And I remember going to a confectionaire, the pastry shop, and sitting and having a cup of coffee and eating two pieces of this. It was so good, and it was so habit forming. And I went home, and I'm like, I feel a little stoned. And I looked in the mirror, and my eyes were pinned, which is what happens when you take narcotics. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. You know, I instantly fail a drug test. But, yeah, even a little bit of poppy seed will do it. Dan, thanks for the call. And this is crazy. We need to put an end to it. It is unconstitutional, and it basically tells us we're all criminals. We're all being watched.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I think it's a fundamental core problem in our culture right now. And it's a multi-billion-dollar industry that wants to perpetuate itself. Welcome back. Let's see here. Gant in Thompson Station, Tennessee. You wanted to agree with drug testing. Do I have that right? Gant? In Thompson Station, Tennessee? I hope we're not having phone problems here. Peggy in Avenger, Texas. Peggy, do you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Tom Hartman.
Hi, Peggy. Thanks for calling. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You wanted to talk about drug testing.
Yes, I wanted to agree with you. I'm not disagreeing by any means. And earlier you had, I heard you earlier in the show mention, next thing you know, they're going to be performing surgery on people for the drugs. And I just wanted to remind you, they have already done that. It was the last quarter of 2013. A policeman pulled over a guy and out of the Walmart parking lot and put him through the absolute ringer, and actually they performed surgery on him, a colonoscopy, after everything else failed. So it is absolutely ridiculous. This is a giveaway to the corporations, just like TSA, and I can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
These are giveaways.
Yeah, I think they are. I think we're subsidizing an industry. We're subsidizing an industry that has enough profit that they can afford to buy legislators to put these things into law. And the legislators go, well, you do want the air to be safe. You do want the roads to be safe, don't you? And everybody goes, oh, yes, please keep us safe, sir. And, you know, give more billions of dollars to the drug industry, the drug testing industry, without thinking that those billions of dollars are coming from someplace and they could be going to education, for example, instead, or building infrastructure, or training supervisors not to spot a person who's impaired, not just because they were taking drugs, but because they're not getting enough sleep and they have sleep apnea, or because they've got a rapidly early developing neurological disorder, be it MS or diabetes, or you know, fill in the blank. I mean, this is crazy. And Peggy, thank you for reminding me of that. Thank you for the call. Thanks for reminding me of that. I remember when that happened. The cop said he saw the guy swallow something or whatever. He was convinced that the guy had drugs. And they did they took him into the station, they searched him, they couldn't find anything, they did a rectal exam, they couldn't find anything, and this guy ended up having to have a colonoscopy. And they still didn't find anything. And boy, if anybody ever had the basis for a lawsuit, that was it. The surgical reference, let me find my original story here got me going on all this. What do I do with my daily take? Anyhow, the American Society of something or other, the anti-drug use group. Here it is. I have so much paper, it's hard to keep track of. The American Society of Addiction Medicine said the major need today is a wider and smarter use of drug testing. It should include not only urine, but also other matrices such as blood, oral fluid, saliva, hair, nails, sweat, and breath. And I said, what's next, surgery? And you're right. It's even gone to that. It's crazy. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls right after this. they figured out how pot works. I thought that they had a pretty good concept of this for a long time, but this is Vanderbilt University. Researchers at Vanderbilt University, led by Sachin Patel, MD, PhD, and published in the journal Neuron. Now, there's been no research on this stuff, official research, for 30 years because, you know, pot's been criminalized. But now, apparently, they're able to do some of this research. And on exogenous cannabinoids. Good, that's pot. And what he said was that they are they regulate glutamate. They dampen excitatory signals that involve the neurotransmitter glutamate. In other words, they're suppressing the absorption of glutamate by glutamate receptors in the brain. And particularly actually in the amygdala, which is part of the brainstem that regulates the fight-or-flight response. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is they believe marijuana use can affect the brain's release of its own endocannabinoids, as the brain produces its own substances like this, and that long-term marijuana use might cause people to experience anxiety when they stop using it, because the brain will bounce back. That's true of pretty much any kind of drug, whether it's the benzo drugs, whether it's opiates, whether it's nicotine, whether it's, fill in the blank, caffeine. There's always, you know, the body's always trying to establish homeostasis, stability. And so when a drug is used, the body tries to respond, tries to change itself to adapt to that drug. Very interesting. So, Wayne in Morgantown, West Virginia, you're suggesting that I'm being misleading in my opposition to drug testing. What is misleading about what I'm saying?
Well, maybe I misspoke, Tom, and I'd like to say hello.
Hi.
And thank you very much for everything that you do. I've been a long-time watcher, first-time caller.
Well, thank you, Wayne.
And what it is that you said the THC stayed in your system for several weeks or however you put it.
Yeah.
But it's actually THC metabolites is what they're measuring in your urine. The actual psychoactive properties of THC only last in your system 2 to 4 hours.
Okay.
So when they're testing us at work, they're not testing us for impairment. They're testing us for a lifestyle choice is the way I feel.
All right. So I stand corrected, and you're right. I recall reading that. And the metabolites are just an indication that you've metabolized THC. I mean, I'm not sure what the difference would be other than that the metabolites might be a clearer indication of the level of exposure.
No, it's just saying that your body has processed the THC, but
right.
The psychoactive properties are no longer there.
Right.
You know, to use a crude analogy, what I left in the toilet this morning wasn't the same as the dinner that I had last night.
Sure, of course. But my point, I think, still stands, and that is that THC is fat soluble. It does dissolve into the fatty tissues in your body, and it can be detected for weeks afterwards, unlike opiates or amphetamines, which are largely water-soluble and don't get stored in your fatty tissues. And so weeks or months later, you cannot detect the presence of them. But that, you know, we're putting a kind of a fine point on it. You're suggesting that if somebody's using pot, that's a lifestyle choice. I don't disagree with that at all. But why should somebody who uses pot be prevented from being in the workplace?
Oh, I totally agree. As a matter of fact, also a story. A friend of mine was hit head on by another vehicle, wasn't his fault, killed like two of his kids, messed him up mentally forever. But when it came to the court settlement, because he tested positive to THC in a urine test, which, you know, again, I don't believe is accurate. A blood test would be more accurate, but they won't spend the money to do that. And so anyway, he got a much lower court settlement out of that accident than he would have if he hadn't had those THC metabolites in his body.
Right, and that's just like the guy who called in the first hour of the show or the second hour of the show who said that he was working at a place in Chicago, as I recall, where they were not salting the sidewalks because it cost too much. The winter had been too long this year, and he fell and he injured himself, and he went to his boss and said, I just injured myself, and instead of sending him to a to an ER to get an X-ray or whatever. His boss sent him to a drug testing facility to find out if he had any drugs in his bloodstream. And the reason for it was that if they could find any drugs in him, then he would not be able to claim disability, would not be able to claim workman's comp, he would not be able to sue the employer for negligence, because the employer could simply say he fell because he was high. And, you know, your relative experienced a variation on that. That's not good. It's not right. And this is just another example of the insanity of Richard Nixon's drug war. Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. Lib in Newberry, South Carolina. You were an NCO in the Army?
Hello, Tom. I was a drug NCO in Japan.
A drug NCO. And so you're a non-commissioned officer who's giving drug tests?
Yes.
Okay.
I had to look at people peeing in the bottle, except for the women. They went into a stall and peed into a cup, and then we poured it into the bottle. I sealed it, signed it, and sent it off to Japan.
Lib, we have just a half a minute before we're going to hit a break. The net of your story?
Okay. It's nonsense. It is absolutely nonsense.
But it's very profitable nonsense.
Absolutely. A friend of mine owns a business here. He has a weekly safety meeting for his electric company. They install electric into buildings.
Right.
They draw a name out of the hat. That person gets $100 and has to go pee in a bottle.
Yeah. Well, at least they're being compensated, and you know, I'm guessing they're doing this to provide some kind of a fig leaf, you know, of assurance for potential clients. And that's a sad commentary on how far our country's gone in toward believing that everybody has to be drug tested.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Lib, thank you very much for the call, and good on you for serving your country. We'll be right back. Very interesting looking workplace testing for drugs around the world. In Canada, there are no dedicated drug testing laws, unlike the United States, although they do allow drug testing in some, quote, safety-related industries. In Europe, they allow drug testing in Spain, Italy, Germany, Norway, Finland, France, Ireland, and Great Britain, although the European Workplace Drug Testing Society, oh, geez, they've got their own society now, has come up with guidelines that take into consideration the European Convention on Human Rights, the European Directive 89391-EEC, which has to do with the safety and work health of workers, and a directive with regard to the data protection of workers. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Danielle. The Health and Safety Act, this is Great Britain of 1974. Oh, Alan Turing, by the way, and I'm going to pick up your phone calls. Alan Turing, I mentioned earlier, they found his theory of morphogenesis was correct. How it is that identical cells can differentiate into non-identical cells? How is it that one cell becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8, becomes 16, becomes 32, and eventually not only are they the same cell, but now one becomes a brain and one becomes a liver and one becomes, you know, skull tissue and one becomes an eyelash and another becomes a toenail and all these kind of things. How does this happen? And Turing suggested that there were 6 chemical, different potential chemical reactions that would create this matrix of, you know, potentiality. And actually they've discovered 7, but he was right. Turing, by the way, in 1945, I think it was, committed suicide, apparently, with arsenic or cyanide, one or the other. I'd have to look it up. And because he had been convicted by the British guy, Turing was the guy who cracked the German code. The Enigma machine, he cracked the code. He was a genius. He was also gay. and he was in his 40s, and he had a relationship with a man who was 19 years old, and not that the age difference was the big deal, although it raised a lot of eyebrows in British society, but that it was a man with a man, and he was actually convicted of the crime of lewd behavior, which was what they convicted gays of back in the 40s in Great Britain. Since then, the Queen has actually issued him a pardon, but he committed suicide just short of his 42nd birthday, 16 days before his 42nd birthday. Very sad situation. A lot of interesting stuff in the science news right now. But anyhow, let's get back to this. This is a fascinating topic. Ryan in Fox Lake, Illinois, listening to WCPT, you wanted to weigh in on drug testing?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I have a couple of statements that I wanted to address. One is that, I don't know if you could claim with certainty that drugs and alcohol, the effects of drugs and alcohol haven't caused any plane crashes or planes to go down. I mean, after they've gone down, everything's destroyed. The person, you can't exactly drug test.
Well, it's not inconceivable that there has been one. But the question is, we had an airline pilot who called earlier, and his point, this was my point, is yeah. that before drug testing, everybody was responsible for looking out for somebody who might be impaired, and impaired not just necessarily from drugs. There's a lot of things that can cause impairment. At the top of that list is lack of sleep, and now they don't pay attention to that. He thinks that the workplace, the aviation workplace in which he works, is less safe today than it was before drug testing, because now everybody just figures, drug testing.
Yeah, I wanted to add something to give perspective, too, because about 10 years ago, I smoked pot pretty much every day. And I quit for like 2 or 3 weeks. I was an athlete, and I wanted to get off of it. And this happened to me twice, this scenario. I got in an accident. I wasn't on anything. I had quit smoking pot, and I hadn't been in an accident until then. And only once till I had been off of everything did I get in an accident.
Right.
And that happened to me again a couple of years later.
Huh.
So it's...
You got clean, you got in an accident. I mean, there's actually earlier I was talking about how they have just discovered the or nailed down the physiology of intoxication associated with THC, and it apparently affects glutamine pathways. Glutamine is a neurotransmitter in the brain. And it clogs up the glutamine receptors. High levels of glutamine are associated with anxiety, and particularly when it hits the amygdala, and which is a area that instead of glutamine hitting these receptors, THC ties them up. But over time, what happens is the body notices it's not getting as much glutamine as it normally gets, and so it starts. The receptors become more and more sensitive to it. So when you stop the THC, there's a period of time while these receptors are returning to normal where they're actually more sensitive to the glutamine. And so a person experiences more anxiety. And anxiety, of course, can produce impairment.
Interesting.
So that might be the mechanism. I'm just speculating. I don't pretend to be an expert on this topic. But that's, based on the piece that I just read in Science World Report. Ryan, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your story. Tony in Leicester, Mass. Hey, or that's pronounced Leicester, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what everyone says, but it's Leicester.
Leicester, Leicester, Mass. Yeah. Okay, Tony, what's up?
Like Leicester, England.
Yeah.
I called a while ago, and I wanted to get your take on the drug testing in other industrialized countries.
Yeah,
I went to Canada. I went to BC about 3 years ago, and I was talking to. Some people there that worked in just an ordinary warehouse type work, and they looked me up and down, to say, and they said, no, that's against the law here. So that was some while back in D.C.
Right.
I just wanted your take on drug testing in Europe especially.
Yeah. There's a Wikipedia page on this, drug policy. Well, that's drug policy. That's not drug testing. I did pull up a drug testing page. This is from testcountry.com, and I don't know how credible it is, but it suggests that the countries of Europe allow drug testing, but you have to do it within the constraints of the European Union rules that provide you, guarantee your right to privacy, to a private life, to protection of your personal data, but also to a safe workplace. And so there's a little bit of ambiguity there. But there are guidelines for legally defensible workplace drug testing. You know, the details of that, I honestly don't know, Tony, but now that the conversation has been joined, I'm going to try to find out over the next day or so to report back. Thanks for the call. Richard in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom? First, I wanted to say this is my new favorite class, and you, sir, are my favorite teacher. And
thank you.
I learn something every day I listen to you. I just wanted to make a point that I haven't heard. All this drug testing on illegal drugs, what about the legal narcotics that people take that impair them far worse than anything that is illegal?
Well, in some workplaces, you're not allowed to take those, or if you are taking them, you're not allowed to work. And it has to do with threshold. I mean, I'm pretty sure that airline pilots who are taking, you know, high levels of narcotics for pain as a consequence of an injury, a broken leg or something, during that period of time, they can't fly an airplane. They would test. But are you talking about illicit use of subscription drugs or illicit?
Because that type of usage.
Yeah, when I took my physical to be a non-commercial, you know, private pilot, there was a conversation at that time. Now, this was, geez, the last time I took a physical was more than 20 years ago. I haven't flown in a long time, although my license is still current. I'd have to take a physical in order to fly. But back then, there was even a question if you were on antidepressants and things like that. There's a bunch of drugs that you can't take and be certified to be airworthy. So, whether that applies to a guy who's an electrician or somebody who's, you know, a construction worker, I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff, though, has gone way over the top. Richard, thank you for the call. Another area where we need to learn more about it. Amy in St. Mary's, Georgia, you're a commercial driver?
Yes, Tom. Yeah, for about 25 years. I started with school busing, and then I got my my CDL Class B and so forth. But my story quickly is that I agree with you totally on sleep deprivation, because I got into limo driving in the Northeast for about 8 years, and I worked for a great little mom-and-pop company that was in Massachusetts, and we went to the six major airports. And I can say that at least once or twice a month, I was so sleep-deprived that I had to come up with the ways I came up with it was I had like shoulder length hair, and I would put my finger on my left earlobe and just pinch my earlobe to the point of pain, because my passengers would be snoring or reading or, and if you're driving through snow and ice and trying to get to a flight, or even worse, awaiting a late flight, you can't always get quality sleep in between. And
sure.
My other method was just biting my tongue to the point of almost bleeding it.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm not proud of this, but I think it's endemic to the trade of limo drivers. And being a woman in a sort of a man's industry, I was always feeling like, oh, well, I don't want to be a wimp and say, hey, can't you send another driver down to Kennedy, because I've been here for 8 hours and,
yeah,
you know, I'm really tired. So I do agree that that the sleep deprivation is worse, although I did for a while manage a school bus company, and we did have mandatory random drug testing, and we did catch two drivers for alcohol. So I have a little bit of mixed feelings, you know, as a parent. I think certain industries perhaps a case could be made, but I do think that sleep deprivation, particularly in deregulation times where drivers are not protected by unions.
Right.
That's just my point.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Amy, thank you for the call. And yeah, I would be real antsy if my kids were being driven around by a bus driver who was drunk. I'll say that right up front. 15 minutes before the end. I don't think there's any bright lines here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Which is what's so fascinating about the entire topic is that, you know, I think we've plunged headlong into massive drug testing without ever having a national conversation about it. Welcome back. Tim in Spokane, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on Comcast. Hey, Tim, you think I'm missing something here? What am I missing?
Well, I think something that everyone has overlooked here is that law is set by precedent. And precedent has been set to legally drug test people.
Right.
Now, I got on my soapbox 15 years ago when we started to get it tested, and I told them that, you know, and some companies ask for bodily fluids or hair, and you can get DNA from that.
Right.
What's to say that they can't figure out your future health problems?
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah, you're predisposed to diabetes, therefore we are not going to keep you as an employee because your health insurance is going to cost us more down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's a very good point, Tim. And drug testing is not only surrendering, you know, the privacy of your person with regard to the drugs, but potentially with regard to a whole lot of other stuff. If they're taking blood, I mean, there's a massive amount of information they can get from your blood, including your ancestry. I mean, it's like giving a fingerprint, or a social security number or a medical history. Amazing. Tim, thank you for the call. Sylvia in Mountain View, Missouri. Hey, Sylvia, you have a comment on drug testing and the MMPI test, the question that the earlier caller said, you know, is there a parallel between the two?
Yes. Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Love your show, and I think you and Free Speech TV are doing a great public service, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I totally agree with you that drug testing is an invasion of your personal privacy. But as far as that MMPI test goes, I think that every member of Congress should have to pass that, as well as every member of the DOD, and maybe policemen as well.
Yeah.
We got a lot of crazy people in our Congress, and some of them are, I think, psychotic. Let's see if we can't do that.
Weed a few of them out. For people who don't know what you're talking about, we had somebody call earlier in the psychology business who suggested, you know, who pointed out that the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, the MMPI, is a test that will purportedly identify people who are psychotic, and among other things. And so is giving somebody an MMPI an invasion of their privacy at the same level as asking somebody to pee in a cup? And I had to admit, I'm not sure, and I think that's one of those situational ethics kind of thing. It's going to depend on the circumstances. But your suggestion that we should give one to every member of Congress, not necessarily to filter them out, but to publish the results so that the voters can know. How's that?
Exactly that, and like I said, anybody who works for the DOD as well.
Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of psychotics there, and some of our police forces are kind of
a little too itchy. Yeah, I say that tongue in cheek. I still think that everybody's entitled to their right to privacy, whether it's the result of their MMPI or the result of their drug test or whatever. But you know. Point made, Sylvia. Thank you for the call. 10 minutes before the hour, we'll be right back with more of the Tom Harbin program right after this. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you 10 minutes before the hour, and we've got a bunch of callers here. Let's please try to be brief. Brian in Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'll be brief. I just had a quick story. Last March, I got hired on through a contracting company to work at Comcast here over in Chicago, and I worked there for a year. I had to do a drug test for that company, that contracting company.
Uh-huh.
Passed it, but of course, it was because of a I smoke on a pretty regular basis, and I drank this thing to help mask it,
huh.
And it apparently worked. So, I mean, I could plug that if you don't mind, but that's not the main point of the story.
Yeah.
Anyway, so later, I finally got hired. We finally just got hired on to Comcast directly, and they made us take another one. And that alone doesn't make sense, because if we had to take one for the first time.
Right.
But anyway, so it can be beaten, because I beat it again with the same stuff. So it... You know, that's just another point.
What's the stuff that you drink that masks THC?
It's actually called the stuff, the liquid stuff.
Really?
And it can be found at, I think, some gas stations. Just look it up online. I don't know. I mean, you have to follow directions pretty precisely.
Right.
It's just basically, taste doesn't taste bad, but I think it's supposed to, it somehow does something with your electrolytes to where
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure, but
it either short circuits the test or it short circuits the THC metabolites. That's fascinating. Brian, thanks for calling and sharing that story with us. Kevin in Ocala, Florida. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
Good. You want to ban drug testing?
Just wanted to comment on the whole drug testing issue. I do agree with you wholeheartedly on the idea that it is very invasive, and it's also essentially self-incriminating the way, you know, an employer can look at potential employees as, you know, criminals based on the idea that they could be, you know, taking all kinds of drugs and whatnot. But anyway, the invasiveness of obtaining DNA and urine samples, that goes along the lines of obtaining medical information, private medical information, which is actually
right.
supposed
Well, here's to a variation on this, Kevin, that I equally oppose, and that is employers who are now pulling credit reports on people before they hire them. And they're discriminating against people based on their having bad credit. And those people who have bad credit are the people who are the most in need of a good job. And I just, you know, I find that, you know, equally disgusting. But excellent point. Kevin, thanks for calling and making it. Cindy in Euclid, Ohio. Hey, Cindy.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
I was calling about a friend of mine who, about a year or so ago, had just kind of mentioned offhandedly at work she was feeling down, that she just felt like she couldn't go on. Well, on the basis of that, they pulled her aside to a counselor, insisted on a drug test. She refused on principle that it was illegal search and seizure, and they fired her.
Wow.
They could have pushed her over the edge if she was really that depressed.
That is a terrible story.
Isn't that terrible?
And this is the state of affairs. Cindy, thank you for calling and sharing the story. John in Seattle, listening on KBCS, our Pacifica affiliate there in Seattle.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to remind folks that about 25 years ago, when all this was beginning, the San Diego Department of Transportation had built themselves a little application that guys use when they came into work before they were allowed out on a bus. The application was use a joystick to center a dot, and the dot had remained within a circle. What they discovered is that only about 20% of the people who failed because they were on drugs. 80% of people failed because they had taken an antihistamine, they were in a fight with their wife. It was unbelievable the kinds of things that caused people to be impaired. And I thought this was cool. At that time, Gary Locke was our King County commissioner, and I wrote to him and said, gosh, can't we do a functional test like this?
Right.
And he wrote back and said, no, we can't, because the feds have mandated a drug test.
Right.
So your point about choosing to do a mechanical test that has its own problems and denying the false positives and negatives and the impact they have is crazy.
Yeah.
When you can do an actual functional test.
Right. This is my point, is measure impairment, not the source of the impairment, because otherwise, you're going to have to put cameras in people's bedrooms to determine if they slept well last night. But whereas what you just described, that's brilliant. John, thank you for sharing that story. That's brilliant. Nathan, I'm learning so much. Nathan in Spokane. Hey, Nathan, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a really quick question about I agree with you mostly, except to the fact that, you know, if we have people in our government that are responsible for our livelihood and whatnot, I respect everybody's privacy, but wouldn't it be a good idea to know if maybe somebody in there would be
I would like my legislators to get high once in a while. I think they'd be less likely to vote for war if they had the blind munchies. You know, I am opposed to drug testing members of Congress. I think that we should do competency tests, and you do that by showing up at a town hall meeting and interrogating them. Nathan, thank you for the call. Carol in Orange, California. Hey, Carol. Got a minute to the end
Hi,
of the
Tom.
Show.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to comment about the drug testing. You know, the first thing that bothers me is that people can abuse alcohol. It'll be out of their system. They can go into work.
Mm-hmm.
Pass a drug test. Somebody that smoked some pot at a concert 2 weeks ago, but otherwise doesn't smoke it on a daily basis, loses their job.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, I have a real issue with that. It's not equal. My husband has also used that liquid that the other caller was talking about, and it does work.
Whoa.
Okay. Yes. He was hired by a company that he had to take a drug test. He, you know, is a regular smoker. He does have a medical card.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't pick it up at all.
Fascinating.
And subsequently, they've done it again, and it worked again.
Wow. So all over America, people are Googling bus stuff, THC, drug tests. Carol, thank you for the call. No, this is not a commercial for that company. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us. Coming up tomorrow, all the latest news and information. You won't be hearing on the corporate news. Plus, we'll be talking the issues of the day with Mike Papantonio, attorney and host of the Ring of Fire radio show and Ring of Fire TV show. Plus, my favorite segment of the week, Geeky Science, right here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, democracy requires you. Get out there, get active, show up, occupy something, tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.